This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to the three-part interview with Dr. Jay Sanguinetti, who studies consciousness, brain stimulation, and meditation as the Associate Director of Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Let's get to the show, The People Behind the PhDs. Hello, hello, this is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks at drz.net. That's dr-z.net, and of course, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and under Zach Brooks and Dr. Z in the Google sphere. This show is called The People Behind the PhDs, and my third and very, very special guest today is Dr. Jay Sanguinetti. Is that correct pronunciation, Jay?
That's right, Sanguinetti.
Sanguinetti, great. Let's call him Jay. How about that? So Dr. Sanguinetti, he studies brain stimulation, meditation, cognitive enhancement, which I think we all need some of, among just a few other amazing, amazing things. Just saying the word, just having the words brain stimulation pass through my lips stimulates me. And honestly, it frightens me a bit. But hey, who doesn't love roller coasters? Jay sounds like a very conscious dude. But before I let him talk about smart stuff, let's get to know him a little bit before he was a world-famous scientist. So Jay, welcome to the program, first of all.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So maybe for 5 to 10 minutes, as long as you want, tell us about you, where you're from, where you grew up, kind of things you were interested in growing up, if they relate to what you're doing now, great. If they didn't at all, that's fine. But I'm kind of directing some of the program towards people who might just be listening to this at age, 15 to 20 something, and think, gosh, I might want to do a PhD someday, but they're not there yet. So just that's why I'm asking this sort of open-ended question. So tell us about you from, age birth to whenever you kind of started into an academic path.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Believe it or not, hearing my accent, I was born in the deep south, down in the Mississippi Delta in a little town called Natchez, Mississippi. So Natchez is actually where Mark Twain wrote a bunch of his books, where he's describing the beautiful scenes of the Mississippi riverboats floating down the Mississippi and the riverboat captains and all of that stuff. So that's my heritage and where I'm from. I lived in Mississippi and Alabama for the first until seventh grade, so the first 10, 12 years of my life. And then I moved to Atlanta, which is a big melting pot city. And at that point, I was obsessed with basketball. So I was playing a lot of basketball, seventh and eighth grade. And somehow on the basketball court, I lost my beautiful, deep southern draw accent. And now I think as a scientist, it would be kind of fun to have that accent. Because I'd be up on stage and I'd be, talking about a p-value, and I'd point to my p-value and see my significance. I think it would be kind of cute, and it would break some of the stereotypes about Southern people.
But what got you into basketball? Was this something you were interested in when in Mississippi and Alabama, or only when you got to Atlanta?
My family is a very athletic family. My mom was a gymnast my whole life. She had a gymnastics gym, so actually I was a gymnast until about, eighth or ninth grade. I would go to my mom's gym every day and do gymnastics. My dad was a swimmer and a basketball player. And, I played basketball. I actually tried to play football, American football, for 3 years. It just turned out that by about the ninth grade, I stopped growing and everyone else kept growing. So I had to give up football.
But you continued with basketball, it sounds like.
I continued with basketball. I ran track. I played a little bit of soccer. But really, basketball was my favorite sport. It has a certain grace to it, that I liked as a kid.
Did you have aspirations at that point to do, basketball in a big-time way, or is it just the love of the game?
You know, I played in Atlanta, which is a very competitive high school basketball scene. And the team that I played for, I lived in Alpharetta, which is just north of Atlanta. And one of the guys on my team ended up playing for Duke.
Blue chip.
In college. And the difference between his skill level and mine was pretty apparent, even in ninth or 10th grade. So I think I kind of gave up wanting to play even at the college level. And, you know, that kind of freed me from the sort of need to reach certain milestones, you know, in terms of the scouts and things, and really just allowed me to play. So I loved playing. I would get, like, you know, best sportsmanship awards and things like that. Because I really, there's just something about the movement of the game and the sort of team dynamics of basketball that I really loved.
What, in this player who ended up playing at Duke, what specific thing was he better at? Was he just physically faster, stronger, the rest of it? Or was anything else that you saw and thought, gosh, you know, I'm not as good as he am?
Yeah, he was just twice as tall, twice as big, and twice as fast.
Okay. Pretty basic metrics. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I played point guard too, so I didn't have to be as big, but I needed to be more. I needed to sort of run the show. There was a cognitive component, you know. I needed to understand what the defense was doing and call plays. And, you know, I love that aspect, the sort of organizational aspect that's happening in real time. And I think it's really important. You know, a lot of scientists sort of shun sports. I go to professional sports, basketball games and things like that, and they kind of pick on me. But, you know, I think there's an important component that our consciousness is embodied in our body. You know, we're not just like brains in a vat, right? We have this body and we're in the physical world and we're moving around. And I think playing like team sports and engaging your body in sports in general is healthy for the brain and the body, you know? And so I'm always encouraging my sort of quote geeky science friends to get out there and play basketball. And I usually bring them on the court and, you know, try to teach them sports and that kind of stuff. And, you know, once you get engaged in that way, it's more freeing than sitting in front of your computer for 12 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you've so far sort of depicted a person who loves sports with a family who loves sports. Where does the academics come in? Was that always a part of your family life as well, or did that come in at a different point?
You know, when I talk to my relatives, so part of being from the South is we have a giant family. We just had a family reunion this Thanksgiving and had 120 people show up. And when I talk to my relatives about it, I ask them, you know, what was I like as a kid? Did you know I was going to be a doctor? Because there's not a lot of not a lot of PhD doctors in my family.
How many are there in your family?
I'd say just a couple, three or four that I know of.
That sounds like a lot, though. You're saying it wasn't very many compared to other families, you know? Is that kind of the comparison point?
Yeah, you know, like I didn't, you know, my parents don't have PhDs. I don't come from sort of an academic family in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah, most of my family members are chefs and musicians and, you know, business owners, things like that.
And so when you asked your family members about your proclivity, you know, what did they say?
They told me, you know, some of the aunts and cousins who are older would say, you know, we kind of knew you were special. You were always kind of smart and interested in, you know, sort of organizing and nature and sort of science and that kind of stuff. But, you know, honestly, I really didn't even know I was going to go to college until the end of my sophomore year of high school. I didn't have a plan to go to college, and I wasn't even making very good grades, good enough grades to get in. And
this People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Harp Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com.
And, you know, that kind of freed me from the sort of need to to reach certain milestones, you know, in terms of the scouts and things, and really just allowed me to play. So I loved playing. I would get, like, you know, best sportsmanship awards and things like that. Because I really, there's just something about the movement of the game and the sort of team dynamics of basketball that I really love.
What, in this player who ended up playing at Duke, what specific thing was he better at? Was he just physically faster, stronger, the rest of it? Or was anything else that you saw and thought, gosh, you know, I'm not as good as he am?
Yeah, he was just twice as tall, twice as big, and twice as fast.
Okay. Pretty basic metrics. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I played point guard too, so I didn't have to be as big, but I needed to be more. I needed to sort of run the show. There was a cognitive component, you know. I needed to understand what the defense was doing and call plays, and you know, I loved that aspect, the sort of organizational aspect that's happening in real time. And I think it's really important. You know, a lot of scientists sort of shun sports. I go to professional sports, basketball games and things like that, and they kind of pick on me. But, you know, I think there's an important component that our consciousness is embodied in our body. You know, we're not just like brains in a vat, right? We have this body and we're in the physical world and we're moving around. And I think playing like team sports and engaging your body in sports in general is healthy for the brain and the body, you know? And so I'm always encouraging my sort of quote geeky science friends to get out there and play basketball. And I usually bring them on the court and, you know, try to teach them sports and that kind of stuff. And, you know, once you get engaged in that way, it's more freeing than sitting in front of your computer for 12 hours a day.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've so far sort of depicted a person who loves sports with a family who loves sports. Where does the academics come in? Was that always a part of your family life as well, or did that come in at a different point?
You know, when I talk to my relatives, so part of being from the South is we have a giant family. We just had a family reunion this Thanksgiving and had 120 people show up. And when I talked to my relatives about it, I asked them, you know, what was I like as a kid? Did you know I was going to be a doctor? Because there's not a lot of PhD doctors in my family.
How many are there in your family?
I'd say just a couple, three or four that I know of.
That sounds like a lot, though. You're saying it wasn't very many compared to other families, you know? Is that kind of the comparison point?
Yeah, you know, like I didn't, you know, my parents don't have PhDs. I don't come from sort of an academic family in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah, most of my family members are chefs and musicians and, you know, business owners, things like that.
And so when you asked your family members about your proclivity, you know, what did they say?
They told me, you know, some of the aunts and cousins who are older would say, you know, we kind of knew you were special. You were always kind of smart and interested in, you know, sort of organizing and nature and sort of science and that kind of stuff. But, you know, honestly, I really didn't even know I was going to go to college until the end of my sophomore year of high school. I didn't have a plan to go to college, and I wasn't even making very good grades, good enough grades to get in. And I took a class, a psychology class, believe it or not. My PhD is in psychology.
This is in high school you're talking about?
This was in high school, okay. Yeah, my end of my sophomore year. And I had a teacher who now is a professor teaching psychology somewhere in the South. And I don't know. So he was just one of those really effective teachers who kind of woke me up to my own inner curiosity. And, you know, he kind of convinced me that the reason I wasn't doing so good in school was because I was bored, not because I was stupid or something like that, you know, and I just wasn't being challenged. And whatever he did, he worked his magic. He really just sort of woke up that curious, you know, scientific curiosity inside of me. And I started taking AP classes. Those are the classes that sort of advanced classes in the South, and started excelling at them and taking biology and chemistry and physics and all these classes I'd never taken. And it just really, I saw a side of academics that I had never seen before.
Now, this is still in Atlanta.
Yep. Okay. That's right. High school.
Okay. And then you eventually got through with high school. Where did you go to college?
My freshman year, I went to Western Carolina. So on the on the totem pole of prestige in North Carolina. It's the lowest of the four-year schools.
That's a good starting point.
Yeah, I loved it, actually.
Thanks for listening to part one of the interview with Dr. Jay Sanguinetti, who studies consciousness, brain stimulation, and meditation. To continue listening, download parts two and three at drz.net/download. That's dr-z.net/download. You can also follow me on Facebook at DRZ Podcasts and Instagram at drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.